Good afternoon, and welcome to From Where We Are, stories of news and culture through the lens of USC and Southern California. I'm Sophia Hausch, coming to you live from Studio B in USC's Annenberg Media Center.
And I'm Yana Carr. It's September 24th. On today's show, a sentencing in the Varsity Blue scandal, student thoughts on USC's sustainability, and why some international students are worried about their visas. All that and more from Where We Are.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has announced a formal impeachment inquiry against President Trump. Trump is accused of using a foreign government to help him politically. Trump had called the president of Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky, and asked him to open an investigation into corruption by Trump's political rival, Joe Biden, and his family. Here's Nancy Pelosi.
The actions of the Trump presidency revealed the dishonorable fact of the president's betrayal of his oath of office, betrayal of our national security, and betrayal of the integrity of our elections. Therefore, today, I'm announcing the House of Representatives moving forward with an official impeachment inquiry.
Pelosi has not endorsed impeachment of Trump until now, despite pressure from the left wing of the Democratic Party. After the recent news regarding Ukraine, more than 175 Democrats in the House support some type of impeachment action. President Trump responded with a series of tweets declaring this action witch hunt garbage and presidential harassment.
Today, Devin Sloan was sentenced for using false pretenses to get his son into USC. Celine Chenoy reports.
Devin Sloan, the Los Angeles businessman and a defendant in the national bribery scheme, was sentenced to 4 months in prison, fined $95,000, and given 500 hours of community service by a U.S. district judge in Boston today. Prosecutors had recommended a year and a day of jail time, saying Sloan showed a breathtaking disregard for basic principles of good parenting and common decency. Last May, Sloan pled guilty to fraud and conspiracy to increase his son's chances of being admitted to USC. He had falsely represented his son as a member of the Italian Youth National Water Polo Team. He admitted paying $250,000 to purchase water polo gear and create false images of his son, who in fact does not play the sport. Sloan had written the judge that he did what he did because he believed that the way college admissions process worked today, no one had a chance, and that cutting a corner was somehow justifiable. Sloan added, "How stupid I was to believe this." 19 parents have pled not guilty so far and await sentencing. Today's judgment sends a message and could indicate what future sentences might be, says Assistant Professor of Law at UCLA, Latoya Baldwin-Clark.
In a way, it's just kind of a benchmark that says, okay, these parents have done, you know, fairly similar things, and, you know, no court wants to be so far outside of what other courts have done or for any particular defendant, and so they kind of set themselves as an anchor.
Devin Sloan is the second parent to be sentenced in what has come to be called Operation Varsity Blues. Earlier this month, actress Felicity Huffman received 14 days. For Annenberg Media, I'm Celine Chenoy.
This week, U.S. District Judge Indira Talvani could hand down sentences for as many as 10 parents convicted in the ongoing college admissions scandal. While prosecutors urged Talvani to consider prison sentences for parents convicted in the scandal based off of the sum of money involved in the case, the judge decided this week to sentence those convicted regardless of the sum of money involved. How does the judge's decision change students' perspective on how parents should be sentenced? Annenberg Media reporters Lola Ackenlade and Sarah Barker asked USC students about whether or not they believe convicted parents should receive jail time.
I don't necessarily think that it's something that people should go to prison for, but I think that definitely some reparations need to be made because I think it really affects a lot of people, not just students and not just families of those who weren't admitted and stuff like that, but like it really is a far broad-reaching effect. But I don't know necessarily how much can be done to really compensate for that.
I'm not really concerned with if she goes to jail or not. I think it's kind of ridiculous. I don't think that's going to fix anything. So if we're talking about how to remedy this situation, those are much larger structural issues. Felicity Huffman or whoever else benefited from their whiteness and their privilege should go ahead and pay the fines of all of the black women who and black parents and other parents of color who have been penalized for trying to send their children to better schools.
When things like this happen, it's like bad news for the rest of us, you know? It's, you know, the value of our degree as well.
I would assume a fine would be fine.
Oh, I mean, I think they should go to prison. I mean, it's a really important issue because it comes down to, you know, the privilege that some people have in this country and in this world, and the fact that these people thought that they could use their money and influence to get themselves into a school and affect their futures. I think it's wrong, and I think that not punishing them harshly is going to set a precedent to where people could do that in other schools and other situations, including jobs and, you know, in a bunch of areas. So I think it's really important that they, you know, we come down hard on people like that, and I think in the long run it's going to benefit, you know, the entire country.
Conservative commentator Michael Knowles is scheduled to speak at USC this Thursday. The conservative group, Young Americans for Freedom, invited him, not without controversy. Michael Knowles has recently been under fire for referring on Fox News to 16-year-old climate change activist Greta Thunberg as a mentally ill Swedish child. Knowles has not apologized and continues to defend his comments on Twitter. Here's Christopher Hahn, the liberal political commentator who Knowles debated with on Fox News.
Gotten into this place where nasty debating has become commonplace, and maybe it's okay when it's between two adults, and I don't think it's okay even then. But when we're talking about children, I think we need to choose our words more carefully. He didn't want to talk about the issues she was raising. He'd rather just try to discredit her. It would have been okay if he wanted to disagree with her ideas, but to, you know, to slander, to slur her, it's not right.
Alec Kirkshank, president of TAPP, or Trojan Advocates for Political Progress, wonders why Knowles is still set to visit USC even after widespread criticism of his remarks.
Shortly after this comment, Fox News said that they would not be inviting Knowles back as a guest. And I don't understand how Yak can still feel comfortable inviting Knowles onto this campus after he said that to Greta Thunberg.
According to Maxwell Brandon, the chairman of Young Americans for Freedom, Knowles will still be arriving at USC on Thursday.
We'll have some security, nothing too insane. I feel that, like, all security is kind of weighed against what we had at the Ben Shapiro event, and it'll be nothing to that level, but the DPS will be president. We've been in constant communication with them, and we're not expecting anything too crazy, hopefully, knock on wood. We expect people to definitely show up and challenge Michael Knowles in the question and answer, which is why we have the question and answer. I personally think it's somewhat blown out of proportion. I mean, nothing he said was factually false. Was it tactful? Maybe not. But again, the girl stood up in front of the UN and everyone's telling us we need to listen to her. But then when you criticize her, what she said, she's all of a sudden a child and immune from criticism, and I don't think people can have it both ways.
Jillian Russell, Angie Stroud, Gigi Panoyer, and Luke Scorzel reported on this story.
Today is National Voter Registration Day, and USC students were doing their part to get young people to register.
I think any, you know, hotspot where there are a lot of young people is important to target, because historically they have not been the ones to turn out and vote. So I think that any college campus in the country and any college campus in California should be a target for people who are encouraging voter registration.
That was Lee Fisher. She's one of several students who stood outside on Truesdale Parkway from 11 to 2 this afternoon, helping students register to vote. The Vote SC table served ice cream to any students who registered or even promised that they would register. And in an effort to make voting easier this election, the LA County Registrar proposed a digitized form of voting on tablets. But Ted Wint, another member of Vote SC, says it's not just about making voting easier.
We also have to stress the security and the safety of our vote and the integrity of our vote. And I think we need to figure out a way in which we can balance both of those needs, because I know that when you make voting extremely difficult, it's very hard to motivate young people to come out to vote. And so I see, like, the positive, like, transitioning to, like, a digital idea of, like, a tablet, but also I think the insecurity of the election is very important also.
Not sure if you're registered to vote? You can check out your registration status at the LA County Registrar of Voters website.
Following the MSNBC Climate Forum and USC President Carol Folt's focus on reducing USC's own waste, reporters Caitlin Chen and Lizzie Resinger talked to students about their views on climate change and how students are contributing to sustainable practices on campus.
Many USC students are still passionate about our planet, having just participated in a climate strike, and the UN opened a larger discussion on climate change during its conference yesterday. Climate change is a hot and important topic, and students believe our younger generation should take charge in fighting against the global issue.
My name is Greg Nasser, and I'm a sophomore at USC. I think it's up to the younger generation, because in the end, we inhabit the Earth for longer than the older generation will. It's going to be our problem. The older generation has already lived, and they don't need to preserve the Earth nearly as much as we do.
Senior Daphne Armstrong has taken matters into her own hands. Around campus, she'd seen countless plastic cups go to waste. So on September 8th, Armstrong launched SupCups, a company that sells washable stainless steel party cups. Think Red Solo cups, but sustainable.
So last year I lived next to a frat, and there were like every Friday morning, Saturday morning, Sunday morning, there were like thousands of cups strewning the ground, and I had just learned that they're not recyclable. So that, coupled with I spend a lot of time outside, like I'm an avid surfer and hiker, a trip lead for Peaks and Professors, spending a lot of that time, like, just I have a huge stake in the environment and I want to protect our planet.
She is hopeful that USC will become a more sustainable campus with the inauguration of Carol L. Folt, as Folt made a point about being more conscious of our campus waste levels during her inauguration.
I'm really optimistic about sustainability in the future at USC because our new administration, President Carol Folt, values sustainable practices.
And with products like Armstrong's, further campus sustainability may be within reach. For Annenberg Media, I'm Caitlin Chen.
A USC student traveling by bicycle was struck by a vehicle last week at the intersection of 28th and University, commonly known as Fraternity Row, or Frat Row. This isn't the first biking accident since the school year began. It's actually one of several, which raises concerns about biking safety on campus and in the surrounding areas. Ari Taylor has the story.
USC Department of Public Safety is currently looking into what happened. Here's David Carlisle, the assistant chief of DPS.
Now, we haven't determined who's in fault in this investigation. We'll have to do an investigation, talk to witnesses, and the report's being prepared now.
9 accidents involving bikes and cars have taken place in the school year, according to DPS. 4 of them happened near Fraternity Row. At Three Brothers local bike shop located on Vermont Street, greasy hands of the mechanics tighten the wheels of cruisers that USC students will ride around campus. This place also receives many of the bikes that are damaged, including bikes involved in accidents. Johnny Mendez has fixed bikes at Three Brothers for 3 years, and in that time, he's noticed a big mistake a lot of students make.
Trusting the car too much. I would say a lot of cyclists think that drivers are going to stop for us cyclists, and a lot of the times they don't, because they're like distracted or they're just in a rush, impatient.
USC students duck in and out of the bike shop. Mendez offers them this advice.
Try to always avoid the car, try to go around, don't try to get in the car's way, you know, because a lot of the times we're in their blind spot. Since we're not a car, you know, we don't have like a metal thing around us. It's a little difficult to see us, especially at night when you don't have no lights.
But the important thing is,
again, David Carlisle of DPS.
If you pay attention and not presume the driver sees you, slow down, pay attention, don't be distracted by talking on your phone. You're going to save yourself some grief.
And for some, even their life. For Annenberg Media, I'm Ari Taylor.
In global affairs, prospective graduate students from Iran had their visas revoked earlier this month. According to the New York Times, at least a dozen students poised to be in programs in engineering and computer science at UCs and other schools were barred from entering the country. Annenberg Radio News reporter Patricia Kelly Yeo lets us know more about what this legal move means for USC international students.
The State Department's decision to cancel these student visas are a reflection of the black box surrounding what exactly disqualifies foreign nationals from entering the United States. USC's Office of International Services confirmed they had not been notified of any Iranian students at USC's having their visas canceled.
The issue with Iranian students having issues with visas is there's limited rights for international students that are outside of the country. So there's not much that can be done if an Iranian student is denied a visa.
Jean Reese is co-director of the USC Immigration Clinic and an adjunct professor at the law school teaching in the Immigration Detention and Appellate Clinic.
Unfortunately, it's a reflection of the political climate that we're in. The president has a broad range of power to deny entry to foreign nationals into the U.S. So although there's a carve-out in the travel ban for Iranian students, what we're seeing here is this kind of extreme vetting.
Reese expects not much to change in the future for international students. She notes that each presidential administration differs in its immigration law enforcement priorities. Without changes in legislation, these seemingly arbitrary revocations are part and parcel of the experience of applying for a non-immigrant visa. Reese also noted that many people have been denied admission to the U.S. since the beginning of the Trump administration.
People who are here who are not citizens have had to become comfortable with some sort of ambiguity in status, and now that comfort is being taken away because things are being enforced in ways they weren't before.
To be an international student in a time when the U.S. is embroiled in a trade war with China and generally heightened geopolitical tensions is not easy. As of fall 2018, USC's international student population included 150 students from Iran and over 5,000 from China. In general, future international students should not expect an easy ride when it comes to studying at USC. For Annenberg Media, I'm Patricia Kellio.
You're listening to From Where We Are. It's 17 minutes after the hour. I'm Yana Carr.
And I'm Sophia Hausch. Coming up, we learn about National Punctuation Day. While most teaching assistants, or TAs, at USC are graduate students, one course in the Viterbi School of Engineering employs undergrads as the TAs. Reporter Shayna Kobernetz for Annenberg Media spoke with a USC sophomore taking on that challenge this semester.
Theodore Jaffrey. I'm a mechanical engineering major with an emphasis in design, an honors emphasis in innovation, and then I'm a minor in business finance. TAing ITP 168, which is the Information Technologies Introduction to MATLAB, Programming and Workspace course. A little bit of a unique position where I'm not a graduate student, so there's not necessarily a significant level of separation in age between me and my students, and in some cases they're older than me. You have to kind of prove why you're the TA. You kind of feel bad when you're going through, you know, students that you know and who you've been in their shoes and you're taking points off their, you know, assignments, but at the same time, you had it done to you and it's how you earn. So it's this weird kind of balancing act. I went to be an undergrad TA because I had a great experience in the course and I think the TAs were a part of that. More importantly, I wanted to make sure that I kept up on my MATLAB abilities. I think generally anybody that's a TA, you know, wants to see students learn how to code. You feel rewarded when you get an assignment that's perfect and there's not, you know, significant issues and the students clearly understood what you were teaching them. Those assignments are pretty cool.
With fire season on its way, Southern California fire chiefs have rolled out new technologies that may help respond to fires better, and maybe even prevent them. Reporter Isaiah Murtaugh has the story.
Fire chiefs from across Southern California are pulling back the curtain on a new fire surveillance system as fire season heats up. The new Fire-Integrated Real-Time Intelligence System, or FIRIS, uses real-time cameras from a plane, mixed with predictive modeling, to help firefighters better understand the potential path of a fire. The system was demoed for the media on Monday morning.
Respond on OC access, 1040.
In the event of a fire, that alert is triggered to get the plane in the air immediately so fire officials can start gathering data. All of the information collected from the plane is immediately available to officials on the ground. The system also makes use of a project from UCSD called WiFire that allows firefighters to more accurately predict fire movements over a six-hour period. Orange County Fire Authority Chief Brian Fennessy emphasized that the introduction of new tech into the firefighting program was a necessity.
Listen, the fire service is at a pivotal time right now. We're embracing technology like we've never done it before. You know, the types of fires that we're experiencing up and down the state have gotten worse.
Ventura Fire Chief John McNeil is excited about the possibilities of the new program.
With the real-time information that this platform can provide, I believe it's going to be a game changer.
For Annenberg Media, I'm Isaiah Murtaugh.
A bust of former university president Rufus von Kleinsmith, the man whose name graces the VKC building on campus, was vandalized in protest on Friday morning. Shuki Zhao and Daniel Halpern tell us what various members of the USC community had to say about it.
The bust of Rufus von Kleinsmith was vandalized Friday morning before the inauguration of USC President Carol Folt. It's located at the von Kleinsmith Center, a building where flags hang of various countries. A pink pillowcase with the words, "Rename VKC," was placed over the face of the bust, and a piece of cardboard with the word "Nazi" was hung around its neck.
So, people are certainly welcome to express their views, but let's hope it doesn't result in any damage.
That was Department of Public Safety Assistant Chief David Carlisle. He said DPS checked the status of the bust and there was no damage on it, so they documented it as a hate incident instead of a crime. Carlisle thinks it could also be a form of protest.
But we are making more routine patrols and are trying to focus some of our surveillance cameras because of some controversy surrounding that incident.
If it was a protest, Alexius Gonzalez, a USC student majoring in psychology, said she disagreed with the action.
Although I know that students are maybe upset about who the building is named after, I don't think that is the appropriate way to deal with it.
Von Kleinsmith is a controversial former president at USC. He was known as a eugenist who encouraged the production of desirable traits among white people. Students have been protesting to rename the Von Kleinsmith Center for a while. On March 5, 2018, the undergraduate student government proposed a VKC name change resolution. On February 11th, former USC Senior Vice President Michael W. Quick assembled the Provost Task Force on University Nomenclature. He said the university must uphold its own values and create a safe, welcoming, and supportive campus, which students like USC sophomore Haley Hunt agree on.
Being an international school, I think that it should be changed because in today's society, like, that's not really acceptable.
For Annenberg Media, I'm Daniel Halpern.
Today is National Punctuation Day, which was founded 16 years ago to celebrate the importance of punctuation marks. Earlier today, I spoke with former copy editor for the LA Times, who is now an adjunct professor here at USC Annenberg, Henry Furman, to get his take on why punctuation really matters. Hey, hi, Henry. Thank you for being here on National Punctuation Day. I just wanted to ask you, why is punctuation so important?
Well, as we're talking, you can hear the tone in my voice where I emphasize certain words. Maybe my voice goes low or high. I pause maybe to think. Those are nuances of speech. If you tried to repeat that in writing, you need punctuation to convey all that. A comma to indicate a pause, maybe a dash for a longer pause. Maybe when I'm stopping and thinking, there's an ellipsis. If I get really excited, an exclamation point. I don't know. What do you think? You need a question mark for that. Without punctuation, the language in writing would be very plain and maybe hard to understand. It adds meaning in really subtle ways.
And what is your personal favorite punctuation mark?
I love the semicolon. I probably use it too much. And people go, why the semicolon? Well, I love it because it both joins and it separates. So you might have two very interrelated thoughts, like two short sentences. You put a semicolon in between, you're saying they're separate, but you're connecting them in a very subtle way too. It's actually kind of a controversial mark for some people. Kurt Vonnegut, the late great novelist, was famous for saying that using a semicolon only proves that you went to college. So not everyone knows how to use them. People have some fear there. So I love it because it's kind of, there's a little mystery to it. It's not obvious to everyone how to use it. And I just find them rolling out on my keyboard when I'm writing. I'm so used to them.
Do you have a least favorite?
I do, with kind of an asterisk, which I guess is kind of a punctuation in a way. So the asterisk is that I really dislike exclamation points, except you really need them in social media, in texts, emailing. You need that thanks exclamation point. Otherwise, it's like, thanks, right? So it's really good in that form. But in formal writing, like a term paper, an essay, a newspaper article, an article on our website here in the Media Center, exclamation points are like you're trying too hard. Another famous quote is from F. Scott Fitzgerald. He said, using an exclamation point is like laughing at your own joke. So I tell students, try not to laugh at your own joke. Minimize exclamation points. So it's my least favorite, but I know that I use it all the time every day in those new forms of media, especially when I'm texting with my kids. It's really important to say, yeah, Dad's not mad at you. Thanks, exclamation point.
And on that note, thank you, exclamation point, to Henry Furman. And Henry says, check out nationalpunctuationday.com. I say, end of story, period.
Ampersand.
Ampersand brings us stories of arts and culture, not more on Punctuation Day like you might think after that story. Today, artists are taking familiar images, symbols, and characters, such as the great cowboy of the American West, and reworking them, transforming them, and making the icon include a broader range of people. Victoria Alejandro has more.
Do you think cowboys sound like this?
I mean to kill you in 1 minute, Ned. Or see you hanged in Fort Smith at Judge Parker's convenience.
Like John Wayne in True Grit? Well, they also sound like this. So I can win, and this can finally end. That's musician Mitski on her 2018 album, Be the Cowboy. She was on The Daily Show with Trevor Noah in 2018 to talk about that album, and she told him that as an Asian American woman, she often walks into a room and feels she has to apologize for existing. And so for this album, she grabbed an American myth. She channels the arrogance, embodies the bravado, and finds the freedom in being a cowboy. This country music concert, the performer on stage wears denim and boots, a cowboy hat, and a Lone Ranger mask, but this musician, Orville Peck, has made the mask his own. Bright red fringe hangs from the bottom of the mask, changing it from the more rugged, gunslinging, manly man symbol it has been for years, and making it a tool of emotional vulnerability. Peck is an openly gay man who smoothly sings songs of love on the trail. USC English professor Bill Handley says there will always be strong reactions when you play with the image of the macho cowboy.
It shows you how deeply embedded these myths are, even when they're not fully consciously understood, that the wider public can have such a mass reaction when the formula is played with. So when Brokeback Mountain came out, I mean, there were jokes on late night talk shows for about 4 months. The idea of gay cowboys.
Were you aware of this? Heavy rains and flooding in California. In San Francisco, guys were clinging to their inflatable cowboys.
But whose track broke records with 19 weeks at number one on the Billboard Hot 100 charts? Lil Nas X, a gay black cowboy musician who some in the country music world didn't even want to admit made a country song. Bill Handley says he's just the kind of cowboy we need today.
So I think that because we live in a culture right now where there's so many lurking bad forces out there and we want some kind of hero, we don't believe in them anymore. So if we have to remake the cowboy into a new kind of hero, I think Lil Nas X represents the cowboy as a kind of community builder.
Hearing Lil Nas X or Mitski, or seeing Peck croon through his fringed mask, it makes me feel like I can be a cowboy too. For Annenberg Media, I'm Victoria Alejandro.
For more stories like this, visit ampersandla.com.
You know, I love Lil Nas X so much. And he's, that new song, Panini, also a bop.
Oh yeah, he's made quite the impression on youth today, I think, to say the least.
That's all we have time for on today's From Where We Are. Zazu Lippert and Ayanna White produced today's show. Isaiah Murtaugh is our executive producer.
Yuki Liang is our board operator. Derek Renfro composed our theme music. Subscribe to From Where We Are on iTunes.
And follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Annenberg Media. I'm Yana Carr.
And I'm Sophia Hausch. Wherever you are, we hope you'll join us again next time for From Where We Are.